Old School Lame Casual Chats is brought to you by Old School Lame, producing various content from blogs, videos, and podcasts discussing about movies, TV shows, video games, and everything else in between since 2011. You can check out the podcast on Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Radio Public, Overcast, Breaker, Pocket Cast, and YouTube. We're associated with Channel Frederator, Manic Expression, The Comic Book Cast, and The Aaron Mehta Show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Casual Chat. I am Patricia, and I'm here with Aaron Mehta from The Aaron Mehta Show.
Hey, welcome back once again.
Yeah, so as of the recording of this podcast, it's Passover, and so we want to wish all of you guys a happy Passover for those who celebrate it, and I hope that you guys have a great week of celebration and remembrance of the day that the Hebrews were able to free their bondage from Egypt. And so today I thought would be an interesting idea if we can cover the Ten Commandments from 1956.
Yeah, and this is not just a movie about like, you know, elements that happened in the Bible. It's not just this, you know, on its own is quite frankly, I think, a very historic achievement in cinema. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, like, you know, it is one of the best movies, I think, that was produced in the 1950s. And that's saying a lot because, you know, the 1950s, you know, there was a golden age of cinema that was, like, you know, coming to a close. You know, eventually a couple of decades down the line, we'd be going into the spaghetti westerns and they would basically have their say on this. But, you know, the one movie, I think that, you know, and keep this in mind, you know, this is from Cecil B. DeMille. Like, this isn't the first time that he went around the Ten Commandments. He has actually done this once before in the Silent era,
yes,
as well. So, like, for him to be able to actually do more of an epic performance of this, I think, quite frankly, I think he's fantastic.
Yeah, and for those who are wondering, wait a minute, he did this before? Well, yeah, he actually did this all the way back around the late 20s, early 30s, where it was essentially a silent film, where he was, like, taking the opportunity to tell this epic scope based off of the Book of Exodus, where he was covering the story of Moses and his journey from becoming the prince of Egypt to becoming a Hebrew slave to being a wanderer to eventually becoming the deliverer of the Hebrews away from Egypt. And so this was the opportunity for him to essentially come back and do a remake based off of a film that he had done at 1923. And release it on a bigger scope than he had ever released it. And
yeah. By the way, so a lot more of a running time as well. This thing goes on for 3 hours and 19 minutes. And that's minus the introduction and that's minus the outro as well.
Yeah, so I know that for today's standards, it's probably not too much of a big deal. It's like, oh, you know, 3 hour movies. I mean, that stuff is a little bit more common now than it was back in the 50s.
I'm sure all the Lord of the Rings fans are chuckling right now.
Yeah, exactly. All the Lord of the Rings fans who have all the special editions with a deleted scene and the extended scenes and all that kind of stuff, and not to mention, as of recently, there was also the Justice League movie that was also over 3 hours long. So yeah, this stuff is not too surprising by today's standards, but back in the 1950s, where we had this and Ben-Hur and various other films, this was a technical achievement.
Yeah, and the one thing I'm really impressed by is that you know, they give so much of like an introduction to all of this. Like, they don't just throw you in there and just say, oh, hey, you know, hope you read your Bible recently, like, you know, because, you know, Cecil B. DeMille actually comes, you know, out of the curtain and, you know, introduces us, like it's like, you know, it's a stage play,
yeah,
pretty much, and, you know, there's a lot of stage play elements in all of this as well, like, you get to see, not just like, you know, the whole epic scenery that we're accustomed to, like, you know, all the practical effects, you know, like all the places they went to, like, you know, they went, you know, still down to, you know, the classic, you know, here it is on a stage, here's all our characters, and, you know, they all have these interactions with one another, and, you know, it's very stage play in that regard, like, you know, all the interactions between, you know, Moses and Ramesses, and, like, you know, everyone within Egypt, you know, also all the Hebrews, like, you know, down on the ground, and, you know, also it's, I love how it basically gives such, you know, a closeness to, like, you know, the massive divide in the society that's in there. You have a Hebrew are all slaves, and but you know, they're not too far of a hand throw away from actually where, you know, the Egyptians, you know, are living the life of luxury effectively, you know, on their hard work.
Yeah, and if you guys are familiar with the Bible, you guys know the reason on why that the Hebrews made it into Egypt. If you want a quicker example, if you want a more detailed example, go check out our Dream Machine episode on Joseph, King of Dreams. But long story short, you have Jacob, who essentially had 12 sons, and one of his youngest sons was Joseph, whom he loved dearly, and his older brothers became really jealous of him, and so they sold him off as a slave in Egypt, and he was there for many decades, and he eventually was thrown into prison for a crime that he didn't commit, and eventually the Pharaoh had a dream about 7 fat cows being eaten by 7 thin cows, and 7 healthy grains of wheat being eaten by 7 thin grains of wheat, and Joseph, who had a reputation of being able to depict dreams and being able to interpret them, was brought out of prison, and he had told the Pharaoh, this is what's going to happen. For 7 years, you're going to have wonderful stocks of food being growing, and then you're going to have 7 years of famine. And so the Pharaoh had casted him to basically be second in command, saving as much food as they can right before the famine begins. And then we have, obviously, Jacob sending his sons over to Egypt to collect the grains. Joseph immediately recognizes his brothers and decides to do a test on him to see if they have gone away from their wicked ways. After they had passed the test, Joseph allowed his brothers with welcome arms and reuniting for the first time in 20 years. And then he brought them over to Egypt so that they can be able to relive the famine. They brought in all of their family members. Those are 12 children, all with, you know, all with wives and all with children of their own. And then eventually, you know, we go back to like several generations in which, you know, Joseph was beloved. But now cut over to the story of Exodus, where it's like 400 years later, and the current Pharaoh does not remember anything that Joseph was able to do during that 7 years of famine. There's an overgrowth of Hebrews, and so they decided to make him into slaves. And this is where the story begins.
And so, I mean, they basically start the story off at that point. And you know, you get to see, like, all the politics that are currently going on within, like, you know, ancient Egypt, you know, and everything that's going on from there. And then it's decided that, you know, all the firstborns need to be killed in order basically to control basically what's going on within the Hebrew, because they're obviously talking about, you know, God himself and mm-hmm. how they're going to basically free them from bondage. And that's so where Ramesses obviously takes it upon himself to say, yeah, we might want to start do something about this and start killing off the firstborn. By the way, they show no, you know, cutaways of this or anything like that. You actually get to see, you know, not like, you know, from like gore or anything like that, but you get to see the despair on, you know, mothers' faces when they're seeing like their firstborns being killed in front of them by the Egyptians. Like, you know, they spare no scene in this. Like, you know, it's pretty, you know, heart-hitting, you know, the way that they bring it, for, you know, for a 1950s movie as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And so we cut over to one of the Hebrew women, Yocheved, and her daughter Miriam, as they're trying to save their baby by building a basket so that they can be able to send him over to the Nile River for safekeeping. One of the Pharaoh's daughters finds the basket, and she decides to take him as her own and names him Moses, which is essentially a name meaning I drew you from the water. And so she raises Moses as the Prince of Egypt.
And by the way, like, the last scene when she finds him, I mean, like, tell you what, they spare no expense in this as well. Like, you know, you can tell that they put water in there, they put, like, you know, the whole stage, everything like that. that, looks like that. And, like, you know, they had to kind of also have to turn it around as well. So, like, you know, in a way that they get around it, they actually put, like, projections of, you know, of, like, the projections of the Nile and everything like that. And I think it's fantastic how it's all been done. Like, you know, they make the whole world so vast, you know, in that. Like, and they have to take something so small and be able to do that. I mean, like, the only thing I can really compare it to, I mean, the only way, it's kind of a really bad example, I guess I would say, but, you know, Spy, do you remember Spy Kids? And, like, you know, where those, you know, those, and also there was, I think it was, like, Sharkboy and Lava Girl as well. Like, they took a stage and, like, you know, they put, like, projections around the place to make it seem a lot more bigger than actually it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, like, those types of movies. Antonio Banderas was in that movie as well. I mean, that's sort of, like, a rough example, I think, I would say, of the way that they kind of did this. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, like, the ways that they, like, the small space that they have to work towards, like, they make it seem so vast.
Yeah.
And, like, in the way they do it. And by the way, this is an example that they use throughout the movie, you know, like, and also, but the one thing I would say that's, you know, good on them is that they know, you know, when they needed big, massive shots and they needed a lot of people and everything like that, they managed to go out and get them and go on scene and stuff like that. I think that was great.
Yeah. They use a lot of blue screen effects. They use a lot of rear projection so that they can be able to film certain locations. But at the same time, you have this large, epic scope that was supposed to be really epic for its time. I'm sure that it took a lot of effort in order for them to be able to pull
it. It doesn't work all that well, though, having a blue screen, because there's one scene when they're trying to put the plinth, like, in the middle of, like, you know, the built city, and then they use a blue flag, and you can see it kind of, like, falling into the background as it's being waved around, which, you know, but they probably needed to, like, you know, probably rethink that a little bit, maybe, when they were shooting that scene.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense that something blue would clash with the blue screen. So, yeah. I mean, there are various moments in which you do kind of tell that some scenes were filmed in a blue screen, because you have, like, some of the movements of bodies start kind of, like, fading away to the background. So, it's kind of noticeable.
They were noticeable, I think, in the costumes, I think. Because, you know, you notice that Ramesses goes through a dramatic costume change when he goes to, you know, goes to the city. You know, that's you know, Moses is trying to build.
Oh, go. Goshen,
yeah. So, I mean, like, there were times that you could tell that they were going to be using blue screens. Because you notice that everybody else wasn't in blue at one point.
Right.
And Ramesses went for a Jurassic costume change as well. He was in black.
Yeah.
Pretty much for his attire. So, interesting, though, is, like, you know, seeing off the costumes, I mean, like, I mean, it's kind of hard to say whether things were, like, you know, accurate to, like, the times of, like, when there's that. I mean, like, how accurate were the costumes?
Very
accurate.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The colors were very accurate to the 12 tribes of Israel. Costumes were pretty accurate. The thing that they really emphasized when Cecil DeMille steps onto the stage is that they gotten historians that were able to help them become as closely accurate to the portrayal of the storytelling of the books of Exodus as they could at that point in time. So, yeah, the colors were accurate, the way that the costumes were accurate. So, yeah, they were utilizing a lot of historians to help them out with that, in addition to the telling of the story of Moses.
Yeah, I might be nitpicking here a little bit, but so sometimes I look at, like, some of them, like, they were, like, you kind of, like, look like, oh, they just took, like, a t-shirt and, like, just put some things on them from time to time. And it was like, it's like, you know, I mean, again, if that's what they wore back in that time, then, you know, fair enough.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, I mean, I can imagine it being pretty hot back then. I'm not sure you can, like, wear something on top of yourself at all.
Probably, oh, sure, like, sure. Probably, I'm sure
going
was.
On bare-chested around the place, to be honest with you.
Yeah, especially it would make a lot of sense since, you know, they would be in the desert and being, you know, bare chested would be the easiest thing to do so that you don't have to worry about heat stroke.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're introduced to Moses pretty mm-hmm. much at this point, and, you know, he is, you know, pretty much a model, you know, Egyptian warrior, I guess you could say, at this point. Like, you know, he's gone to Ethiopia. Not only has he, you know, defeated the Ethiopians in war, but he's actually taken the hand of friendship and, you know, got them as an ally.
Yeah.
Pretty much, and now has basically got them their riches.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And also, he goes over to the city of Goshen to build a town for Seti I, who is the current pharaoh of Egypt at that point in time. So I guess technically, you know, that this would be the brother of the pharaoh's daughter, so that would technically make him his uncle, but he calls him as father. So it makes a lot of sense because as we saw earlier in the story where she was where the handmaiden of the pharaoh's daughter was talking about that, you know, she lost her child, she lost her husband, she has nothing left, and so that's the reason why she decided to take the Hebrew baby as her own son, because of everything that she had just lost. And so,
well, one little thing to also highlight here is that Menmet is also pretty, a strong character in the story, because she saw the fact that Moses was taken from the basket, and she saw the cloth that indicates that he was taken from Hebrew slaves.
Right.
Yeah. So she becomes quite a story driver in this. And the one thing I'll definitely say about this is that, I mean, can we really say that, you know, out of all the characters that we're going to meet, was any of them, like, you know, kind of like throwaway or, like, anything like that? Like, I mean, obviously you get, like, the slaves themselves and, like, you know, but they're sort of kind of there to, like, show, like, you know, what times were like at that time,
sure,
at that point. Like, you know, they weren't there to, like, drive a story. They were there to kind of tell a narrative of, like, you know, what the slaves were going through at the time.
Exactly. They're used for emphasizing the scale of the story itself. So you have the slaves, you have all the Egyptian captains, you have Jethro's daughters. So you have essentially this large group of people. I mean, there's easily hundreds of people who are cast in this movie. A lot of them don't get
it. It was going to be kind of like, you know, like, a, you know, guy, you know, 100 guy on the left didn't get a story arc, you know, like, you know,
yes,
minus
yeah.
one star. Like,
yeah,
come on.
understudy number 456, the one with the sheep and the one who was able to gather up all the bricks, you didn't get a story arc. What's your plot?
Yeah, just like, so, I mean, it's impossible to, like, give every single character, like, you know, keep this in mind, this is about the story of Moses, basically,
yeah,
and him freeing the slaves and then going up to basically get the Ten Commandments, and then, you know, the battle between, you know, God's word and sin, effectively.
Sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, those were, like, the main things that were there, but, you know, you would kind of, you know, wouldn't think that, because, you know, they have time to, like, tell the story of Joshua as well.
That's,
you know,
right, and it makes a lot of sense, because Joshua would be Moses' successor. So it made a lot of sense why they decided to include him very early on in the story, where we get to see his works as a stonecutter, and then eventually he becomes really loyal to Moses, and then at the point in which Moses goes over to Mount Sinai when he is no longer able to lead the Hebrews anymore because he committed a cardinal sin, he decides to have Joshua take over as the leader of the Hebrews and leading them over into the land of Canaan. So yeah, I'm really glad they were able to bring in Joshua earlier on, because that's something we did not see in Prince of Egypt, which is really crucial to the character if you were to go over to the story of Leviticus and Deuteronomy.
Yeah, so Charlton Heston plays as Moses, so
yes.
I mean, I think he does an excellent job.
He does
doing
a fantastic
this.
Job, yeah. This is definitely one of his best roles that he ever done.
Yeah, interesting also as well that he also plays the voice of the burning bush as well, which, mm-hmm, like, I wonder, is like, is that because, you know, is this probably like the word of God going through Moses' head, and then obviously it sounds like Moses, maybe.
It could be a possibility. Yeah. I mean,
is that what they were going for or not?
I mean, yeah, because when we were watching the movie, I don't know if this was like our end, but yeah, Moses, when he was, you know, hearing the word of God, it sounded very faint and quiet.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, we don't know if that's basically the what's happened to the film, I'm not too sure, but I mean, like, if there's ever a remastered version of the movie, I'm sure we'll find out soon enough.
Sure.
But I mean, like, but I mean, putting that aside, like, the fact that it's Charlton Heston also playing the voice of God and also playing Moses as well, like,
yeah,
that's interesting, that, like, you know, is it because, you know, the voice of God is going through Moses' head, and Moses basically interprets it as his own voice going through him. I'm not, you know, like...
I mean, that is a really interesting interpretation, that's for sure.
Yeah, it is. So, we're then introduced... Well, I mean, we're introduced to Ramesses pretty much in that. I mean, what do we think of the rivalry between, you know, Moses and Ramesses? Like, you know, it's there from the get-go, isn't it? But in The Prince of Egypt, you know, what DreamWorks did, they were friends, pretty much.
They were brothers.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, which is not in the Bible. And also, Ramesses had absolutely... And if you were to read the original Bible, Ramesses II is introduced right when Moses walks in to ask him, "Let my people go." They'd never even met in the original story of the Bible.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, there's two... We've got two movies about somewhat the same thing, but so they don't seem to portray Ramesses really correctly, do they? Like,
no, they don't.
They don't have interactions until that time that Moses says to let his people go.
That's correct. Yeah, because if you remember, it was Ramesses I that was essentially the Pharaoh's daughter, and then Seti was the Pharaoh that was around during Moses' time. So, yeah, when Moses was banished from, you know, after 40 years, that is when he met up with Ramesses II, and that's when they met for the first time. Yeah, there's no indication in the Bible that Ramesses II or Moses knew each other. And there's another thing that we have to bring up. In addition to reading through the scriptures and the historians, there are also multiple books that have taken cues from the relationship between Moses and Ramesses, and that is, of course, The Prince of Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we're now referring to the movie The Prince of Egypt. We're referring to the 1949 novel by Dorothy Clark Wilson.
Yeah. So the one thing I'm a bit I'm a bit comfortable with, I guess, one of the movies, like, you know, the Pharaoh himself, Ramesses the First, is like, you know, they try and play him off as kind of like, you know, maybe, you know, not as like serious as, like, you know, obviously he's not gonna be as serious as Ramesses. Ramesses takes himself way too seriously in this movie.
Of course, I mean, he is the only son of the Pharaoh, and that is his destiny, to be able to continue the lineage of what Egypt should be. He's trying to make it bigger and more grander than his previous generation. So you can understand why he treats it seriously.
Yeah. I don't know if the way they portray, you know, I'm talking about his Ramesses' father and Moses' father in this. Like, you know, they're trying to portray him as like, you know, he's a more kind of laid back, really, and kind of like, just kind of like delegates all his like tasks to everybody else. And he gets involved in knee B.
Oh, Seti the First, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I don't know if that's, you know, an accurate portrayal of him.
I don't really know. It doesn't really say too much about the portrayals of the pharaohs in the Bible. But again, I think that the historians will probably get like scriptures and detailed research when they were doing the production of this film at the time. So again, I'm sure that they would already know about that part, as opposed to the Bible, in which it focuses on Moses, not focusing on like every single character in depth.
Yeah. So one funny thing I think we find in this movie is that Vincent Price is in this.
Yeah, and he plays as one of the captains named Baca.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of weird to like see Vincent Price in here when we've known him for, like, you know, he plays like, you know, the factory owner in Edward Scissorhands, and he plays his father. And we've known also Vincent Price also was like, you know, one of the guy. He was the kind of the story driver of, you know, 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo as well. And so I mean, like, so to have, you know, here grow up with Vincent Price in those with those character roles, and then all of a sudden we see him as there as a younger version of himself, as playing his backer, as playing one of the Egyptians. I mean Vincent Price has always been known to play kind of like, you know, villainous roles in a way, so I guess this sort of fits him.
Yeah, absolutely. And you remember that Vincent Price was a classically trained actor, so it makes a lot of sense why he would be in an epic like this. He was never a person shy from playing in very cheesy B-horror movies or anything that geared towards kids, because his philosophy was, if you were to portray as a fun actor in a lot of things that were geared towards children, then newer generations will be able to gravitate towards him long after he's gone. And he did a really good job nailing that hindsight, because we still remember Vincent Price to this day.
Yeah, I mean, you look at other actors in here. You know, you got Yul Brynner, you got Anne Baxter, you got Edward G. Robinson is in this movie, Yvonne DiCarlo. Like, you know, this is a star-studded, a bunch of classic actors, you know, from back in the day.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I'll tell you what, if they did this today, I guarantee you the budget would have been up through the roof to pay off, you know, some of the modern-day actors today.
Oh, absolutely, to, like, yeah. I mean, you would have, I mean, it would easily be over, like, half a billion dollars. And, you know, not to mention that, you know, the cost of being able to film everything in both maybe on set and on the location that the stories were portrayed in. And
exactly. You know, you got to drag, you know, can you imagine trying to drag Leonardo DiCaprio into the middle of the desert? Like, if he's like to make him as Moses.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, he's fought off bears, so I think he's been through worse.
Yeah. But I mean, like, that's CGI, isn't it? Like, you know, I should tell you what, like, this is the fun thing about this. Like, you know, they use real life animals in all of this, and
yes.
How you get them all to behave, like, you know, in this whole situation is must have been mad that's asked to
do. Yeah, I mean, the animal trainers must have had a field day having to deal with like hundreds of camels, sheep, geese, ducks.
Well, you know, you get the cobra scene as well. Like, I mean, they must have had a challenge with the cobras, because they ended up having to like make it where the actors had to just kind of describe what was going on between the cobras. I mean, I guess it's, you know, it's pretty cruel to get cobras to fight one another, isn't it?
But, yeah, of course.
Of course, you're not going to basically do that. But I mean, I guess that's why it works better in animation. But mind you, they then decided to make it into, you know, a song number about the Prince of Egypt.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah,
playing with the big boys now. Yeah. By the way, you don't get any musical numbers in this at all, like, you
know,
if any, the music's in the background, if anything, which I think is really great, because it sets the scene, like, you know like you're in the Pharaoh's palace, and you know, you get to feel like this whole, like, you know, oh yeah, this kind of feels like an evil layer, kind of like
yes.
kind of vibe that's going on. And also funny enough, like, even the you know, they have like, you know, nice, you know, ambient music playing in, like, in the backgrounds of some of like the scenes where, you know, you got Nefertiti and like Moses, like, you know, interacting with one another. And, you know, know, there's usually something nefarious is currently going on, but they try and make it kind of sound as sweetened as, you know, as possible in
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely,
yeah. And, yeah, which, you know, brings you into, like, the false sense of security, and I think sets the scene very well.
Yeah, and it was done, performed by Elmer Bernstein, and he does a lot of great movies that he did the soundtrack for. We're talking about everything from To Kill a Mockingbird, to True Grit, to Cape Fear, Twilight, Animal House, Airplane, The Blues Brothers, Ghostbusters. Mm. So, yeah, we're talking about a guy who has a varied, you know, career in producing some amazing music.
Yeah. Some interesting nitbits, actually, to look over here, and actually, I've only just discovered this now. So, apparently, the role of Moses was offered to other people. Like, you know, so Hopalong Cassidy star William Boyd, he was offered the role of Moses, but he turned it down because he felt it would, interfere with his, you know, cowboy fame. You know,
I guess it made a lot of sense, because if he was known for being a cowboy in a lot of the films that he was at the time, and you're talking about like something as grand as, say, Moses from the Book of Exodus, I guess it could be like a case of like, no, this will be like severe miscasting. That would be like the equivalent of, gee, I don't know, like
you know, we've had some like mismatched actors in the past though before, like, you know, like I'm gonna say Arnold Schwarzenegger, look at all the roles that he's played, you know, during his career. Like, you know, he played, I mean, the lesser we say, unfortunately, you know, Junior, like when he played like a pregnant man and stuff like that. There was Kindergarten Cop as well. Like, you wouldn't think, you know, an action star would be going around running around with kids, would you?
Yeah, imagine Arnold Schwarzenegger were to be cast as Jesus.
Yeah, like that would be strange, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I bring to you the bread of life. Sounds take like, this as my body.
Sounds like a role Rainier Wolfcastle was taking in The Simpsons. Oh, it's just like, let's get silly. Oh, just...
That's the joke.
That's the joke. So, yeah, but, you know, a lot of, like, it looks like a lot of painstaking went into going. It's like, you know, I'm pretty sure they went after, you know, a lot of actors and actresses, you know, to play all these roles and everything like that. I think they must have been absolutely happy with what they ended up with eventually in casting.
Oh, yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about some of the best actors of their time being into this film that essentially was, like, top billed. It was kind of like when we were talking about It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, in which you had some of the quintessential comedic actors back around the 1960s. You had everybody who was in there. You had Milton Berle. You had various other actors who were famous for their time. And, you know, it's essentially like that today, in which you had like some of the best actors coming together for this massive film.
Mm-hmm. So, by the way, I'm actually just doing the number crunching on this. Now, this took $13 million to make.
Yeah.
And now, that doesn't sound like much.
No.
But, I mean, let's keep this in mind. Like, this is 1956.
Right.
If they did the Prince of Egypt today, we're probably looking at a budget of $147 million.
Yikes.
Yeah. I mean, like, to be fair, that's on average. So, like, but it kind of makes you wonder, like, you know, you look at the Prince of Egypt, you look at the actors that are involved, you look at the scenes that are taken, you look at the music that's brought in as well, and, you know, and you could get all that to $147 million if you did that today. That's a bargain.
That is a bargain,
and look what you get in return. It's an epic movie.
Yes, exactly.
That's 3 hours and 19 minutes long.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you have to consider that you have the soundtrack, you have travel, you have acting, you have to pay your thousands of background actors, you have to train the animals, you're not even counting costumes, not even counting catering, not even counting...
I suppose there's a question, like, you know, by the way, I'm just throwing this real, like, you know, inflation calculator, so you have to forgive me if that's completely wrong, but, you know, if you think $13 million can go, you know, a lot further in 2023, then please let me know from 1956. But, I mean, like, dare I say, maybe... double that if they did the Prince of Egypt, the Ten Commandments today. Like, you know, that's probably, I'd say, $300 million.
Yeah, $300 million
to make all of that. I could probably imagine you probably do that.
Yeah,
that.
Easily. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And to let you guys know, by the way, this was a very successful movie. By the way, $30 million to make $122.7 million at the box office.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
Yeah, we're talking about a film that is, to this very day, very culturally significant. I mean, it was in the AFI's list of, like, the films that should be archived forever in the Library of Congress. A lot of people put this in, like, their top 10 most grand epic films of all time. And every year since 1973, it has aired on TV around Passover.
Do you know what the equivalent of $122 million is in from 1956 to 2023? Do you know what inflation is? $1.3 billion.
Wow, that's as much as the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Is it, you know, yeah, like, so if they did Ten Commandments today, it could, well, I mean, if it gets the same reception, I mean, yeah, it could have broken a billion.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Mind you, I question, though, because, like, I mean, obviously in some, you know, cultures in the Middle East and in some areas, like, you know, obviously the visual portrayal of, like, some of these characters is, you know, sort of, like, not accepted.
Yeah, it's pretty blasphemous, yeah. And that's another reason why we talked about in Dream Machine, that was the reason why Prince of Egypt was banned in multiple countries, because of their quote-unquote blasphemous portrayal of the story of the Book of Exodus. So, yeah, it's not too much of a surprise that the Ten Commandments and Prince of Egypt would be banned in various Middle Eastern countries.
Yeah, exactly, which is a shame, really, because, like, if you take this movie just, like, on the movie alone, it's very, very good.
It is.
Yeah, it's, like, it's one of the great classics. It's up there with Citizen Kane, I think, you know. It's one of the great movies of all time, like, one of the historically significant movies. At least definitely one of the movies you definitely got to watch before you die.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sure that Leonard Maltin has probably had this on his list of the best 100 films that you need to watch before you die. Absolutely. Alongside with other epic movies such as Lawrence of Arabia and Ben-Hur. But, yeah, I would say that there's a lot of great things to cover in this movie. And I think that another thing that a lot of people really gravitate towards whenever that they talk about this film is just about how accurate it was to the original telling of Exodus. Now, there are some things that they did change, like going back to the beginning where Ramesses' daughter, the Pharaoh's daughter found Moses on, you know, the Nile River, and she decided that she was going to raise her as her own. Well, in the Bible, she actually was looking for a maiden so that she can be able to wean Moses until he was of proper age to be sent over to the palace. And so Miriam, which is Moses' sister, comes by and says, "Oh, I know somebody," and she actually brings you know, Moses back to his biological mother, and she raised him until he was old enough, which was probably like around 5 or 6 years old. So they were able to raise him for several years. And there's some other stories in there, like, you know, the jump between each of the stories. Like, you have 40 years from when he's a baby over to when he's the Prince of Egypt. You have another 40 years from when, you know, he was banished over into the desert to when he finally returned into the palace to proclaim to the Pharaoh, "Let my people go." And then you have another 40 years going into when they were wandering in the desert to finally when he was taken by God in Mount Sinai. So, yeah, there's some other things in there, but for the most part, you have all the beats correctly. You have Moses as a baby, him being raised in Egypt, his eventual banishment, him going over to Jethro, him finally seeing God and being told to go back to Egypt to free his people, and then finally all the 10 plagues, going over to the Red Sea, and then finally they ended off with Moses going over to Mount Sinai, which is something that they don't usually portray. They usually ended off with finally they're free and now they're going to go over to the Promised Land. They don't continue it off in the Book of Leviticus or Deuteronomy, so which is great.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also they wrapped all this up like in 3 hours and 90 minutes. I'm surprised it didn't take longer to take all those story elements. To be fair, though, like, I mean, there were some things that they just couldn't do. I mean, I guess maybe technically at the time, like, you know, they couldn't show like all the plagues that were going on, like,
yeah,
the people being attacked,
exactly,
like, you know.
They couldn't have frogs jumping around, they couldn't have lice and locusts, you know, eating the people.
Maybe they could at least do the boils bit, like, you know, like,
oh, sure, the boils, yeah, the boils would have been really nice touch. Yes, and I guess maybe they could have shown like cattle like just laying there, you know, like pretending that they're dead. That could have been another nice touch.
They could have done models for it, I guess.
Yeah, they could have had models for it, sure.
Yeah. I tell you what, though, like the bit when, you know, the firstborns, you know, basically when Passover actually happens, you know, like the way that they portray it, like, you know, it's, I mean, today, I mean, given like, you know, like the green effect that we see from Disney's, like, obviously been done to death, I think, at this point. But, you know, you look at that, you know, that green mist coming from the sky and then coming, like, you know, spreading all around Egypt. So I'll tell you what, it's like, it does give you a creepy vibe of all of that. And they did a really good job of, like, doing all of that.
Yeah, and I really like the effect of when Moses and everybody in the house are enjoying their Passover dinner and you hear screams and cries of all the people who had lost their firstborns.
Exactly.
And it is so eerie and scary.
It makes you wonder because, like, I mean, there must have been people who also were very skeptical about Moses themselves and, you know, did not, you know, hear the warnings. And so it might just have been the Egyptians who were also affected by this. It would have been probably other people around the slaves as well.
Or even worse yet, for people who didn't even know about it. And maybe Pharaoh's just, like, not even letting his citizens know about it, saying, like, oh, this is just merely a coincidence.
I think
don't
we can safely say during biblical times, social media was not a thing. But you know, you just the fact that you see this going on, then you just hear cries and screams and everything like that. Like, it's just it sort of kind of reminds me of, like, you know, those horror movies where you don't see what's going on, but you know that you can hear it happening. And you just can't help but the back of your head, your neck just kind of starts to stand on end.
Yeah.
When it's going on, like, you know, that's the type. I mean, again, the Ten Commandments isn't a horror movie. It's like it's a, you know, it is a telling of, like, you know, a times in biblical times, but. But, I mean, you can't help but, like, you know, when they introduce these themes, like, you know, you are just stood there just in awe of, like, you know, and you just play, your imagination plays out what could be going on in there.
Right.
You know, like, you don't dare want to imagine, like, you know, the great details of it. But mind you, there are bits when they do show it because, you know, there are bits where, you know, people start dropping dead. And then you see Ramesses' son then is finally dead as well.
Yeah. You know? And then you have that scene in which when Nefertiti, who is Pharaoh's wife, and he's basically telling Ramesses, it's like, you know, your son is never going to come back, and she wants to get revenge on Moses because earlier in the film when she first heard Ramesses crying out, all the firstborns shall be dead, and then she decides that because she still loved Moses, she was going to go over and rescue Moses's son Goshen. And that was you know, a very sweet thing to do, especially since Moses had wanted nothing to do with Nefertiti anymore, but she still did it anyway. And then the anger that she had with Moses after they weren't able to save you know, their son, and then she even told him, like, bring me, you know, the blood of Moses on your sword. And then even Ramesses was like saying, you know, I'm gonna change my mind and get my people back and kill them off, especially with everything that they've done.
Yeah, but then, like, you know, Nefertiti, I think, has to realize that unfortunately, like, you know, it's not something that Moses can stop. Like, you know, Moses is not God.
No,
and
he's not.
Yeah, exactly. And so I mean, you know, it's kind of interesting because, like, you know, it was Ramesses who basically brought this curse upon everybody.
Pretty much.
I mean, I guess Nefertiti is kind of, like, too blinded by love, I guess, you know, to kind of, like, see through all of that and, you know, to realize that Ramesses actually is the cause of all these problems in the first place.
Right.
Like, you know, like, oh, wait, maybe if you just let these people go, maybe, like, you know, none of this would have happened in the first place, really, and you would have still had your son.
Right.
Exactly. So, yeah, I do like, you know, you finally get to see, you know, because the whole movie, and, you know, regardless if this is, you know, accurate or not, Ramesses does have this sort of, like, air of invincibility towards him, and he feels very cocky and everything like that. Like, you know, he can basically, you know, backtalk Moses, you know, in front of the Pharaoh, even though the Pharaoh basically will, you know, I mean, he's inviting that. You know, he can treat Nefertiti terribly, you know, if he wants to, because what's she gonna do?
Yeah,
exactly. And, you know, and he's got this, you know, this. But the, you know, the minute you see, you know, a bit of, you know, weakness within Ramesses, it's not when Nefertiti's, like, you know, manipulating him to, like, do all sorts of terrible things, but, like, you know, he finally loses his son and he's basically just going mad, like, hoping that, you know, his Egyptian gods are going to bring him back again.
And they don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that he was able to withstand a whole bunch of plagues. He was able to withstand, you know, a week with no water because water had turned to blood. He was able to withstand the hail of rain, frogs, lice, locusts, cattle dying, 3 days of darkness. That was nothing compared to the firstborns dying and his son was killed off.
Yeah, the one thing I will definitely say is that, you know, when the hail finally started coming down, like, you know, it did kind of look like the fruity variety, you know, when it was coming down. Like, it just, you couldn't know. I mean, obviously it was, but then when it all started setting on fire, I mean, obviously that was kind of, oh yeah, that's kind of like a big thing. But, you know, like, I mean, the one thing I will say is that, you know, you can't really say that, it's kind of unfair for a 19th 1956 music, so like, suddenly just going to blow you away with like all sorts of effects. I mean, like, to be fair, I mean, for what they had at the time, they did a pretty good job of what they've got.
Yeah.
Now, you can't make a fire tornado anymore. Like, you know, the only thing you can actually do is just draw it. Or else basically you somehow, you know, do something really dangerous, like having an actual fire tornado going around. And fire's unpredictable.
Oh,
like,
sure.
You know, so the only way you can really do is illustrate it and then animate it and have it going on. Anything like that. It kind of reminds me of some of the older, like, you know, fantasy epics that, you know, we've seen back in the time. So
that was,
in a way, you know, having the bad portrayal, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and the way that they were able to film the parts of the Red Sea in which they were able to take footage of it and reverse it to make it open and then play back the normal, you know, footage of it and having it close. And yeah, I think that that was also really well done too. And I think another thing that, again, is sadly underrepresented in the story of Moses is the people's reactions after they left Egypt, where they were pretty much miserable without Moses's leadership. I mean, especially in the scene in which they go over to Mount Sinai and Moses was gone for 40 days and 40 nights up into the mountains, and they have no idea what to do. And so one of the characters that is introduced in this movie, Dathan, who was a Hebrew who became an Egyptian captain, he said, hey, why don't we have this golden calf so we can worship it? And everybody just goes crazy for it. Everybody starts drinking and dancing and throwing gold everywhere and almost having sacrifices. And then when finally Moses returns and he sees that everybody's gone crazy without leadership, it kind of, you know, reminds me of that scene in which in Community, or, you know, when, you know, the guy brings in the pizza and then it's like, oh, I'm back, here's the pizza, and then the whole place is on fire.
You know what, there's been a lot of, like, you know, I would say references to the Ten Commandments in the way. Do you remember that episode of Dog, like, you know, when Mr. Dink, who's trying to leave the scouts, like, you know, he has to leave to go what's going on. And then, you know, say it's Lady Rogers Klotz in charge, and then, like, you know, basically he brings, like, you know, a lot of bad, vibes to, like, the whole camp, and then they all go into rebellion.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Like, you know, that's portrayed quite a lot where, you know, the leader goes away, everyone's left to their own devices, they all go crazy, and then the leader comes back and wonder what the hell's going on.
Yeah. And they were ready to stone Moses multiple times, especially in the scene in which when, you know, they're trapped between the Pharaoh's men and the Red Sea. It's like, you know, stone Moses, he's the one who's going to lead us to our death. You know, everybody was ready to do it until eventually he said, have you no faith? Have you not seen that the 10 plagues and, you know, all the miracles that God was able to perform, and you still are doubting me?
To be fair, like, also, not only that, I mean, Moses has his own, you know, followers too. So, like, you know, when they were about to stone him, all the people kind of came around and said, no, don't do this. What the hell are you doing? No, we need him.
Yeah, exactly. And there were a lot of other things that were in the Bible that they never showed in the Ten Commandments. Like, when they were first wandering in the desert and they had no food left, and they were saying, you know, what are we going to do? Are we going to starve here? We might as well go back to Egypt because at least we had food over there. And so Moses prayed to God for manna, and then manna fell down. And then they were like, no, we need meat. And then he brought quails down. And then finally they were saying, oh, you know, now that we're in the desert, what are we going to do about the snakes and the scorpions? And so God had to rain down that fire tornado so that they can keep the people safe, in addition to keeping them warm from, you know, the cold nights. And so, yeah, this is not too much of a surprise of the lack of faith that the Israelites would have.
It's just amazing, like, you know, you can't feel bad for all the people, like, you know, who said, oh, I'm going to stick around the calf, and then, you know, Moses basically just smashes the calf and they all fall down into the ground. You can't feel bad for those people, can't you? Like, look at all this stuff that Moses has done. Like, he's pretty much shown you everything that God can do to protect you, and, like, yet you still not believe him.
Yeah, and that's the reason why they wandered around for 40 years until the old generation died off, and then the new generations were the one who ended up in Canaan anyway. So yeah, that just goes to show you what lack of faith in God will do to you.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, like, to be fair though, like, I mean, I don't know, I mean, I would say that, you know, well, imagine if you were just basically there and everyone was going crazy and you were just kind of just standing around there, they're saying, oh, good grief, I hope Moses gets back pretty soon. Like, you know, I wonder what happened to those people.
Well, they were the ones who were eventually saved. I mean, only few people were able to be saved, like Joshua, for example, and a few people. But yeah, for the most part, most of them had pretty much died off, with the exception of the younger generation.
I mean, when people were leaving, they showed you that. Yeah, it's funny, they showed you, like, the whole generation, like, all the, you know, the powerful men able to, like, you know, lift things and basically, you know, get away from Egypt. And then, like, you know, also all the children, like, with the next generation who are going to, like, you know, move everybody on. And then you saw the older generation, like, look, you know, I might not make it, but please, can you take this plant to, like, you know, plant in the garden?
Yes.
And, you know, so, like, you know, you got to see, like, all of humanity effectively, you know, going away from, like, start to finish.
Absolutely, yeah.
Effectively. So, yeah. And, you know, I tell you what, like, they ended in a pretty good way, like, you know, because Moses, you know, himself also recognizes the sin that he, because he obviously, he killed Vincent Price.
I mean, that's one of them, but the other sin that he did, and again, I know that they probably couldn't show this in the movie because of technical limitations at the time, but there was a scene in which everybody was thirsty, and so Moses hit a rock and water came down, where ordinarily he should have prayed to God for water to come out, and because he did not rely on God to give people water, God saw this as a major sin and prevented Moses from entering into the promised land. So that's why he had to go to Mount Sinai to reach out to God. And so God was able to take Moses up into heaven, who is one of two people who had never died, him and Elijah. So yes, Moses has never died in the story of the Bible whatsoever. He's still alive up in heaven.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, but I mean, that's the Ten Commandments. I have to say, like, you know, you would think that they wouldn't be able to cram, you know, a lot into 3 hours and 19 minutes, but good grief, so they put in, you know, the right amount of everything to basically take you from, like, you know, the beginning of Moses to the end of Moses.
Yeah, and you would think that, oh man, 3 hours and 19 minutes, that sounds so long.
It's worth it, though, even if you only watch it once.
Yeah, and here's the thing. If you have the Blu-ray release, it splits it up into two parts. So you can be able to, like, watch it, you know, a little bit one night and then watch the rest another night. So yeah.
Well, actually, in March of 2021, they actually did the 4K UHD Blu-ray release as well.
So they probably have everything in there.
It's probably on one disc.
Wow.
Yeah, so, like, I tell you, I'd be interested to actually get a copy and see what it's like on my 4K TV.
Oh, that'd be really nice.
Yeah, like, because, you know, keep this in mind, like, you know, there are some movies that, because they've been filmed, and I think the Prince of Egypt, the Ten Commandments comes under this, because I think it's like 70mm, 35mm, I think.
Yes.
Because it can be blown up, because you remember those 1970s, like, you know, adverts that way, is it, were, like, you know, upscaling to HD? That's the reason why those Popeye, you know, cartoons will be able to, like, you know, be upscaled into...
Oh, yeah.
4K, because they're filmed in that way.
Yeah.
So a lot of anything that's filmed in that can basically be upscaled in that, and, you know, to 4K. I mean, like, yeah, they can be that can be done.
Yeah. We've both seen that Popeye clip that was done in 4K, and it is so incredibly detailed. The background, it is so unusually smooth, and the colors really pop out. So yeah, it can be done, and because it was filmed in 70mm and 35mm print, it can be a possibility that it can be upscaled to 4K.
Yeah. So, I mean, in closing, I mean, like, the Ten Commandments, I think, if you've not seen it so far, I mean, seriously, give it a watch. It really is worth it.
I do agree, 100%.
I mean, is it better than The Prince of Egypt? I mean, to be fair, I mean, like, The Prince of Egypt, like, is an animated, you know, epic that, you know, obviously, they only got so many titles. They couldn't turn, like, you know, The Prince of Egypt into a 3-hour movie, effectively. I don't think DreamWorks were ever going to allow that. But, I mean, if you really are, I mean, the one thing I would say is that there has been comparisons done in the past between The Prince of Egypt and The Ten Commandments, you know, where which one is better. And I think both have their own strengths and weaknesses in one way. Like, the weakness, I think, for The Ten Commandments is, like, obviously it's a 3-hour and 19-minute movie. It's going to take you a while to get through. I mean, there are some complaints, kind of weird complaints, that Moses is a bit preachy. And it's like, well, he is a biblical character. So,
he's a,
like,
prophet. Of
exactly
course
he's going to be preachy.
Yeah, that's the point.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I mean, I guess The Prince of Egypt is a bit easier to suggest, and it's a bit more, you know, pleasing, I guess, on the visual aspect, but that's an animated movie, so of course it's going to have those things. It can get away with more stuff.
Yeah, and it has a lot more comedic scenes, like, you know, the scene in which when Moses and Ramesses are riding into the chariot and they pretty much destroy...
Which, again, never happened in the Bible.
Nope, never happened in the Bible.
Yeah.
And then there's also the scene in which when Hotep and Hoi are doing their big dance number. Again, that never happened. And then, of course, you have a lot of little scenes here and there that are trying to make it a little bit more humorous. Never happened. But yeah, I mean, here's the thing, like, a lot of the stuff that was featured in The Prince of Egypt was, you know, either omitted that was featured originally in The Ten Commandments, or were completely changed entirely. Like, for example, like, Moses and Ramesses were never brothers. That's one thing. excuse me. And another thing is that, again, Seti never really saw Moses as, like, a son, per se. So, you know, Moses was part of the Egyptian lineage, but for the most part, you know, he wasn't, like, treated as, like a really close, you know, relationship towards him. There are some other scenes that are in there that are kind of, like, incorrectly portrayed. Like, they didn't have the correct time jump of, you know, between the birth of Moses all the way up until him being the prince of Egypt, to his wandering, to eventually coming back. I mean, he still looked fairly young. Like, it took place like maybe several years in, when originally, you know, all that stuff should have happened by from baby to age 40, then 40 to age 80, and then 80 to age 120. And the final scene, they never portrayed what happened after the Hebrew slaves were free. So again, there's a lot of things that were omitted from Prince of Egypt compared to Ten Commandments, but I understand because they're running on a much more shorter time. I would say that there's a lot of great things that are in the Prince of Egypt that we can be praising for. Like, the relationship between Moses and Ramesses, I know that was not either in the Ten Commandments or even in the Bible, but it's a really strong and really great relationship that tells the story in a very unique way. The music is phenomenal, the animation's great, and it was able to captivate the really strong moments from the original Exodus book in a really unique way. I think that it's definitely one of the best films based off of a biblical story that you can find. So yeah, I mean, Prince of Egypt is still a major lineage to this day, because as of the making of this podcast, they just finished wrapping up the Prince of Egypt Broadway musical. So that has still become massive. And DreamWorks don't really do a lot of Broadway musicals. I mean, sure, they have Shrek the musical, but...
Well, that's more like, you know, they will license out, like, you know, other theater production companies to actually do, like, you know, Shrek and, like, you know, various other things as well. And that's why I understand. That's the reason why Shrek Retold got made. So,
exactly,
like,
yeah. So imagine that Prince of Egypt would get the same accolade to basically have this major production. It is very commendable that it was able to do that, especially since Prince of Egypt underperformed when it first came out because of the reasons we mentioned both here and on Dream Machine. But yeah, people even still to this day say that if, you know, you don't count like the big ones like Shrek or Kung Fu Panda or How to Train Your Dragon, that Prince of Egypt is probably the best DreamWorks film that they've ever made.
Yeah, I think it's frankly fantastic.
Yeah, I would say it's in my top three.
Definitely.
All right, so that is it for our discussion of the Ten Commandments. For those who are listening in, happy Passover to all of you. Let us know in the comments below about what your thoughts of the Prince of Egypt are. Did you really think that this film is better than the Prince of Egypt? Or do you think that maybe it's not as good as, say, maybe the 1920s version? So, yeah, let us know which portrayal of Moses and the story of Exodus you like the best.
By the way, as far as I'm aware, there's no abridged version of the Ten Commandments, so if you're looking to kind of, like, you know, breeze over it and anything this way. And by the way, if you think you get an idea of what you're in for the Ten Commandments by just watching the trailer's 10 minutes.
Wow. Yeah. It is 10 minutes long, which today you would have a trailer that's maybe like 2-3 minutes, but no, they said 10. Yeah, because you're talking about a 3-hour, 19-minute movie.
That's not a trailer. That's a short.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, why do we need to air a Looney Tunes short or a Popeye short when we could just watch 10 minutes of the Ten Commandments?
Yeah. Anyway, but we don't try and cheat your way through this. Like, you know, go see the movie. It's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Whether you see it on TV or whether you see it on Blu-ray or even on 4K Blu-ray or DVD or whatever that you own, please go watch it. Until then, we hope to see you around soon. Take care.
Happy Passover, everybody.
Happy Passover.